Hello, magic seekers, and welcome to It Turns Out She's a Witch.
We're your hosts, Laura and Shannon,
and welcome to our podcast coven.
Turns Out She's a Witch podcast would like to begin today by acknowledging the Duppin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which we live and record the podcast. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Hello to our beautiful podcast coven. We are back with you for another episode of Turns Out She's a Witch. We are joined by a very special guest who has been with us a few times on the podcast now, and we are always amazed at her wealth of wisdom and knowledge. She is an internationally respected pagan practitioner, metaphysicist, and witch whose passion is to make practical magic accessible to everyone. Her down-to-earth yet scholastic spiritual style, along with her skill of weaving ancient techniques to solve modern problems, make her work unique and compelling. We are discussing something that is happening tomorrow, so we can't wait to dig into it. Welcome back to the podcast, Stacey DeMarco.
Hi. Hi, everyone. Good to be back. Thank you for having me. I so appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you know we're big fans of yours. We'll have you here every episode if we could.
So this episode is inspired by Valentine's Day tomorrow and also the Priestess Path six-month course that I'm currently doing with you. And in a recent lesson, we learned about the mythos of Yemaya and Oranmila, which I truly love this story and wanted to share it with our listeners. Can you please retell it?
Yeah, it's a really romantic, in a way, story. It's kind of unusual. But it's a nice one. You've picked a nice one for Valentine's Day. So Yemaya is Yorbian. So, you know, it's a African, you know, Yorbian story. But Yemaya is a very beautiful river, Orisha, right? So like a goddess of the waters. And she's beautiful, right? So, you know, all the gods, and she's single. So all the gods are like, yeah, you know, like she's going to need a husband. Let's try and impress her, right? So, you know, I want you to imagine this in a more modern way, in a way is that, you know, here she is. She's a great catch and all the guys, you know, are after her, okay? Mm. And so her friends are saying to her, right, well, you know, this is fantastic. All of these gods, you know, they're all handsome and talented and they've all got gifts. This is going to be, you know, this is going to be great. So she is sitting on a rock at the side of, you know, one of her beautiful rivers, and various gods are coming along, and her girlfriends, her friends are sitting there going, check that out, like he's really cute, and what do you think of him? And everyone's having a fun time, right, because he's, you know, it's kind of nice to check out all the handsome men that are coming, you know, as suitors for her. And so she is sort of sitting there, and then a god called Oranmila comes, and he's older and he's not so handsome, and he feels though that they could be a good match. He's a god of divination, a god of, you know, great powers of his own, and he feels like he's got something to offer her. And, you know, he can see that some of the other gods are just like, whoa, how hot is she? But he's not about that. He's about, like, I think I could love this woman, you know, like I want to give her respect. But from Yemaya's point of view, she's looking at him going, yeah, but nah, Like, he's not, you know, like he's not all that hot. He's not all that handsome. He doesn't really stand out amongst all the others. And he gives her a gift, a small gift, and he meets her, and she's not all that impressed. And she kind of turns away and starts talking to somebody else. And he's heartbroken, right? He's absolutely heartbroken. So he goes and speaks to one of the gods of wisdom and says, look, I really want to marry her. You know, can you suggest the way that that might be possible? And so they suggest that he does some research about her. He finds out about what she likes and doesn't like, and so that the gifts that he might offer her would be more intimate, more thoughtful, you know, that she can see that it's not just her physicality that he's attracted to, that he's actually gone to the, you know, the trouble of finding out about her. So he goes out and spends time checking with her friends, you know, watching to see what she likes and doesn't like, what she might need, talks to her parents, you know, like does all of this and comes up with this huge parcel of different gifts, right? So he's literally staggering with the weight of all of these things that he has gathered for her, right? And he's walking to, he sees her, and he goes and grabs everything, and he's walking, and he can't see where he's going. The pile is so high, and he's kind of staggering, and then he falls so hard and so fast that he turns himself inside out for a moment and stands up, and he's inside out, completely authentic, completely as, you know, the inside of yourself is showing. And he's like, oh, and he runs, and he quickly turns himself back the right way, and he's sitting there going, oh my God, how embarrassing. Parcels are everywhere, gifts are everywhere. There is no way that she will ever pay attention to me now. I have just embarrassed myself. But the truth was, for 10 seconds, Yamaya saw the true self of this man, this God. She saw him from the inside out. She saw what he really was. And what he was beautiful. What he was soft-hearted. What he was honest. What he was full of love, not just for her, but for life itself. And so she went over to him and agreed to marry him. Isn't that nice?
That's so beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's beautiful. So it's kind of a story about, it's not really about the outside, you know, it's about, you know, taking this time to, you know, get to know someone from the inside out and to understand that there is great beauty sometimes where, you know, there's not a great beauty on the outside, you know, like there's a great beauty in depth, that we should look for depth in our relationships. Beautiful.
100%. I love that. You know, I know when you told us that in our workshop, I got all teary. I was like, oh.
So, like, it was
moved
so,
by that know, story, yeah.
You can imagine him being all galunkety and all these other hands. Yeah. And you know, he's got no chance, poor bugger, at all, you know. And then he trips over and turns himself inside out. I remember reading this story first and just going, oh, that's kind of gross. He's turned inside out. Ew, you know, like that's even worse, you know. But then you realize, you know, the metaphor and the beauty of the story, and it's so nice, you know. And in that whole tradition, the Yorubian tradition, there is quite a lot of stories that I put under the category of Me Too stories, you know, like these gods that try and take, you know, the purity or take sexual favors without you know, any kind of consent, and they always, you know, end up dead, or, you know, at the worst case scenario. So there is justice in those stories always. It's a little bit different than the Greek, right? These guys, you know, when there's something not right, they get the justice done to them. So it's cool.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Not bad at all. It makes me think of, so I've got a seven-year-old, and it makes me think of the Beauty and the Beast story and how the character of Gaston, he's the one that always imposes himself on Belle and is insistent that she should fall in love with him and marry him, and she's like, piss off, I want to travel the world and read my books and I'm not interested in you, and he can't understand that. But he's actually quite forceful with her. Like even in the live-action movie with Emma Watson, he's like, you know, pinning her up against walls, and I'm like, far out.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He ends up dying.
Listen to us laughing. He ends up dying.
He does. But he tries to kill the beast and then the beast.
He's not a very nice character. I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. That is not a nice character.
No.
So a lot of the stories of, you know, let's call it love and romance, you know, they have to have one hell of a nasty protagonist, you know, it's often that way.
Yeah. Because drama. But it's also reality, unfortunately. Yeah. Oh, okay. I'll get back on track. Stacey, can you speak to us about Eros and his mythos?
Yeah, so look, Eros, I have a thing about Eros because everyone sort of, poor Eros, who, you know, everyone kind of sees Eros, or not everyone, you know, there's a lot of people who actually have knowledge about mythos now, but, you know, for a long time, Eros was kind of seen as this fat little Cupid, like this childlike, you know, little Valentine Cupid that fluttered and delivered messages and all that. And nothing is further from the truth, you know, like Eros, you know, in the Greek is a virile, handsome, you know, at the top of his game god, who's one of the oldest energies in the Greek pantheon. So, you know, we have Gaia, we have Uranos, the sky and the earth. But even before that, you have the idea of chaos, you know, like the Big Bang, the idea of the beginning, the creation myth of the Greeks, is that there was everything and nothing, and then there was chaos, you know, everywhere. And then the organizing influence was Eros, right? So Eros was seen as an organizing influence, right? Like it's not just, he's not just this kind of fluttery light energy. He's an energy that can create and control the universe. It's a very different kind of view of what love does and is. You know, we probably, the most famous story, you know, of Eros is Eros and Psyche, and it's a really big, long, involved story. So for those of you who love mythos, you know, and love stories, go and look that up yourself, because there's like so many different versions. But the version that, you know, the thing that I wanted to mention was this: Eros was one of the first organizing influences in the universe.
I love
that idea, that we choose through love, that we organize through love. I can't think of anything more powerful for a day like Valentine's Day. It's not always just about love of two people, you know, intimate partners, that sort of stuff. This is the love of the universe. Like this is, I think, the meta, you know, feeling of what Eros is.
I love that. So foundational, building block.
Yeah. Love of self, love of, you know, like it's not just that one kind of love of intimate, you know, like a romantic love or something like that. That's the least of it. Yeah.
So love true.
That. Now, Stacey, can you share with us what the Greek ideals of love are?
All right. So this is another one. Oh, my God, this is such a huge topic. But the Greeks, they had like a different sort of idea about love, right? Like they sort of saw love as, there was different sorts of love, different kinds of love, and they were important as each other. So, you know, in our society, we have this idea about, oh, sort of romantic love, you know, on a day like Valentine's Day, oh, that's the important thing. Well, the Greeks sort of saw love of civic society, you know, love of community as a separate love to the love that you have for a sibling or the love you have for your parents the love you have for a child, the love you have for your friends, philia, you know, like the love that, you know, that was a very important building block in Greece. The love you have in even in wartime, the idea of that you are there for the man that was next to you in the line, the phalanx, so that the line of you know, at war, you had to protect him with your shield arm and you fought, you know, like so there was the love that you would, the love of your society that you would give your country, that you would give your life for. Right? Like so there were very separate kinds of love. And they were not above or below. There was no kind of this one is better or that one. The love you would have, there's lust, the love lust type thing, which, you know, if you look at the Stoics, for example, they talk a lot about how important love is, but this, you know, the higher love, not the lusty love. Yeah, so they would, you know, one of the keys to Stoicism is this idea about love being kind of a solid thing rather than this flighty, ephemeral thing. And you know, I think it's wonderful to have the passion, you know, the passionate thing, this fiery, they talk about the fiery, passionate love, but they also talk about the longevity and the gravitas of a real love, and that's what you should be trying for, because the other stuff, it's like a fire, can be easily blown out. You know, you blow it out. Mm. You know, so they had really thought about this topic.
Yeah,
right? This is a big topic for the Greeks, and the idea that the love of friends, you know, like this idea of friendship being as valuable a love and a love of self as being a valuable of love as any kind of romantic love. Right? So I think that's a very different way to see love. Like, we don't break it down like that. We kind of know that, yes, there's a love of this and a love of that. But this idea of the love that that neither one is better than the other, you know, like that is... that's a kind of radical concept for back then, you know.
Yeah. It's a radical concept for right now.
Yeah. And you can see where, you know, that love of the civic, you know, the love of society, the love of, you know, doing things for the society, arts, you know, all that sort of stuff, sport, arts, you know, there's no wonder the Olympic Games started there. There's no wonder that democracy started there, you know, because of this, the importance of the love of society, the love of everyone coming together, you know. Like, I find that super interesting. If that wasn't so important, well, then democracy, why would that ever rise, you know?
That's like, right, it's that driving force behind it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So many passionate people in all those different areas.
Yeah.
And, laying down, you know, that.
Yeah, and you know, I often, you know, tell this story about the word idiot, right? Like, so the word, you know, we call people idiots, right? Like, it's a very common word, but the Greeks invented that word. An idiot meant someone who could take part in civic life but didn't.
Oh, wow.
So you didn't vote, you didn't go to your local gathering, you didn't help society, you're an idiot.
Oh.
All right. So yeah, they saw it like that. Like, what the hell is wrong with you that you would not do this?
Yeah.
Like, why don't what you don't have love, you don't have the thought to do this? What, you're an idiot.
Right? I can imagine that'd be quite a harsh word to use against someone though in that society.
That was not a good thing.
That was the worst thing to be called. Wow.
Yeah.
It's understandable.
I love the idea that it's still here. We still use the word.
Yeah, true.
It's different. It's different. But we still. Every time I hear it, I feel like, oh, I could be really nerdy now and tell people where that came from. But I'll shut up.
Yeah.
I look like an idiot telling this. Not here in this context.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we want you so badly on this podcast. We're going to change.
It's the nerds.
Oh, we love it. You know we love you. So we're going to change locations. And I would love to know if you have a favourite love story from the Norse.
I do. I do. Like, this is one of my favourite love stories, full stop, because it's kind of not a love story in some ways, but it is.
Mm.
So one of my favourite goddesses of the Norse is a goddess called Skadi, right? And it's spelled S-K-A-D, that funny D-I. Mm-hmm. So that's pronounced with a T-H, right? So don't think I've got a lisp. It's I'm saying it correctly, right?
Yeah.
So Skadi, she is the goddess of mountains and of high places. She hangs out with Uller, who's both of them invented skiing, and she likes the cold, right? And she's got like wolves for friends. Like, it all sounds very cool to me. Like, this woman I would like her life. It sounds great. But anyway, it's a long story, but her father gets killed by the gods, right? And in Norse law, you can ask for retribution, right? Like some retribution or restitution, right? And since we're dealing with other gods, restitution as in I need something, you know, back for the death of my father, seemed a better idea than retribution, because who wants to have a fight with a whole bunch of other gods? So she goes to see Odin and all of them and basically says, right, so I'll forget all the nastiness here, but you need to make good on this, right? And so Odin says, so what would you like? What would be good? And she goes, well, actually, I need a husband. Not a lot of husbands where I'm from. And, you know, Ulla's my brother, and, you know, he's pretty cool, but he's my brother. So, you know, I'd like a husband. And he goes, well, we've got lots of gods here you can choose from. It's going to be hard. And she's kind of got her eye on Balder, right? Because Balder's beautiful. He's the most beautiful of the gods. But it's kind of like she, you know, like Odin's like, like, let's make it fair. So he says, I'll tell you what, I'm going to line all of the gods, the eligible gods up, the ones that aren't married. But all you'll be able to see is their feet. Oh, so you've got to judge from their feet.
Oh,
right. And so she's like, doesn't matter. Balder's pretty hot, so he'll have hot feet. It'll be fine. And so she's standing there and there's a line of them and she can only see their feet and she's like, okay. And she goes to the next one, and she goes to the next one and she goes all the way along looking at their feet and she picks one and the curtain's drawn back and it's not Balder, it's a god of the sea called Njord. N-J-O-R-D, Njord. And he's pretty handsome. He's not what she thought, but, like, he's got great feet. And so, so she agrees, all right, yes, I'll marry you, right? And so they marry. And as tradition is that the bride comes to live in the realm or the house of the husband, okay? This is just how the Norse society was at the time. And so she goes away from her mountains and she goes to the sea and she hates it, right, because the sea is noisy. Sound of the ocean all the time and the seagulls, wah, 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 all the seabirds, right?
Not the mountains, is
and
it?
She can, yeah, no sounds in the mountains and she can smell the seaweed, poo, you know, like I, and she's there for ages and she's trying so hard and she says to him, listen, I'm trying really hard to be happy here, but there's nowhere for me to go. I'm not ocean based. It's too much for me. You know, can we compromise? Can you come to my realm for a little bit? And so he's like, okay, I'll try the mountains. We'll try the mountains. And so he gets taken to the mountains and she's like, oh, thank God, isn't this beautiful? She's up high in the mountains, all her wolf pack are there, and there's these, you know, these very quiet winds and, you know, just that whole sort of minimalist thing going on, you know, with the mountains. And, of course, Njord's like, this is death. This feels like death. It's cold and it's icy and it's just like black and grey and white and there's no blue of the ocean. Mm. And, like, I don't know. I don't think I can be happy, right? And the story goes that, you know, for a while they decided to split up, right, because, you know, both of them were powerful entities in their own right and they could never be at their best, right? Mm. But in the shoulder seasons, like some we would call it spring and, you know, autumn, they go to each other's realms, right? So they stay, there's Axel. They go to each other's realms, right? So there's this idea for me about compromise, about we can, you know, we can't change the authenticity of who we are. Like if there are some really important things eventually, you know, that we can't express in a marriage or we can't, you know, be ourselves in a marriage, that, you know, eventually that's going to come up. Eventually that is going to be a problem, right, which it was for them, right? But they decided that after splitting apart that, hang on, you know, we are lonely, we do want each other, you know, they had children, you know, eventually that sort of thing. So, you know, can we find a way that even for a short time we can find space?
Makes it work.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of a very modern story.
I like that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a modern story. So, you know, I wouldn't want to give up my wolves either if I was her. So.
Totally fair enough.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any tales of love from the Celts?
Everyone's got tales of love. Like I would say every culture would have a love story in there somewhere, as the bottom. But one of the ones that I would probably tell you is around Aengus Og, or Aengus the Younger. And this is a very, very famous story about the swan princess, right? Like, so I don't know whether you've heard of this one before, but it is just so beautiful. And it's kind of like people sort of say, oh, maybe, you know, the basis of Swan Lake might have come from something like this, or Christian Andersen's Stories of the Swan. So this is a very, very old story. Basically, Aengus is kind of like the love god, you know, like the Cupid, the Celtic Cupid. But you know, like the Celtic Eros, you know, like very beautiful, well-placed. He's the son of Boann, which is a very famous sort of Celtic goddess. And he was looking for a wife and he couldn't see anyone that he liked. And he dreamt of a woman. And this woman in his dream was so beautiful and just so real that when he woke up, he was like, okay, I know she's out there. I know she's real. I've got to find her. And so he goes to his mother, who's very powerful, and says, look, you know, I had this dream. This is what she looks like. You know, there's something to do with swans in here. Like, I remember the dream, but her, I cannot settle for anyone else but this woman. I have to find her. I have to find her. And so Boann goes out looking and he goes out looking, and eventually it's one of those big stories of, you know, there's things that happen in between, you know. But basically he finds out that she is a princess that has been I don't like using the word curse, but let's say enchanted, and enchanted as a swan, okay? And the only way that she can be freed is if he goes on Samhain night, so on Halloween night, one night a year, and he goes to her and there'll be 150 swans on the lake and he's got to pick which one she is.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? How's that for a love story, right? So He travels all this. It's like, you know, there's these terrible things he's got to get through to get there. It's, you know, one of those big sort of journey ones. And he goes to this specific lake on Samhain night, and he sits there and he sees all of these swans, and he gets into the water with them. And some of them attack him, and some of them are, you know, they're all like, you know, it's all quite chaotic, the swirl of swans. But he spots her. He knows the swan. He knows his heart. And so he reaches out and brings her out of the water, and she transforms into the princess. Aww. And they marry and happy ever after.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is so beautiful. I love it.
Yeah. Oh. So, and they marry, you know. So it's kind of a, you know, like that, you know, once you know what your heart's desire is, you can spot it anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like it's such a beautiful story. But like, he had to go through a lot more than I'm telling you now to get there.
Yeah. Doing some trials by the sounds.
The trials, yes, of Angusul. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I have loved hearing these lovely stories, but I want to change it up a bit. Yeah. And what about the other side of the coin? Are there any love mythos that act as more of a warning?
Oh, this, look, anything to do with Zeus. You know, like this, I think in so, you know, many mythos, you know, like I was talking about the Me Too stuff, you know, yeah. Like, you know, it is awful, you know, some of this stuff. I mean, the Medusa myth, if you know how Medusa started, you know, people forget the beginning of the Medusa story, that, you know, she was tricked, you know, she was a beautiful woman, she was a mortal, and she was tricked into going into the temple, and she was being raped by Poseidon in Athena's temple, you know, on top of the Acropolis. And Athena saw it and thought, oh, great, they're having sex in my temple, right? Like, Poseidon and her don't get along. And so she thought, ah, fantastic. So there's not a lot she can do to Poseidon, you know, she'll get him back somehow. But she was really going to get hurt, and she turned her into Medusa.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it's this, you know, there's all these stories of consent and you know, of you know, like these stories of the time of injustice and, you know,
when punishment.
Punishment, right? Like, so this idea of, you know, Athena got it wrong in this case. Yeah. You know, with all due respect to Athena and Zeus, you know, like, you know, they, you know, sometimes the gods get it wrong. Yeah. And, you know, people often will say to me, well, how come the Greeks have got these strange stories where you really are going, gee, that's not so good. They made a mistake. That god made that mistake and that god. Well, that's the idea,
yeah.
You know, to show that the gods make these mistakes.
Learn from
it
that.
It doesn't turn out well. Learn. Even the gods can do this. You know, they're not untouchable gods that don't make mistakes. That's a big difference between Roman and Greek and, you know, say the monotheistic gods, which are kind of like, oh, you know, you must do what they say. They can wipe out, you know, like there's a, you know, Christian god makes a flood, wipes out everything pretty much, but that's okay. You know, so not all due respect, that's okay, right? That's a learning situation, right? But that's not how the ancients saw their gods. They saw their gods with fallibles and problems and misjudgments. And, you know, like, you know, here's a warning for you. Every time this goes wrong, do you want to do that? No, you don't. You know, so one of my patroness, Artemis, has got a story. There's a kind of cool story about, you know, she often would have these, you know, hunters or, you know, people who use the forest, and, you know, they use them well, right? So she would support them. She would help, you know, make sure that there was, you know, they would come out with an animal to feed them or whatever, right? But sometimes people would be in there and they would do the wrong thing. And, you know, one of the stories is you know, there was a particular hunter who she actually quite liked, and so did Zeus, her father. And this guy was a fantastic hunter, went in, but one day he's in there with his hunting dogs and he comes across a grove, and she's in the grove with, you know, a little pond water, you know, and she's having a bath. So Artemis is naked. So if anyone knows about Artemis, she's not married. She has no intention of marrying. She's, a maiden. She doesn't really want to go down that romantic pathway of having a husband, and, you know, in the early myths anyway. So she, the idea of someone having a perv on her, it's not good, right? So she becomes aware of him. And so she gives him a chance to turn his head away, because she's aware that, you know, oh my God, he's seeing a goddess, and that is hard to turn away from, right? So she gives him some mercy in the beginning. So she's aware he's looking. And so she kind of turns her body so that he can't see it, you know, anything. And she gives him a little bit of mercy time. So if he turns around, if he goes, oh my God, I shouldn't be looking, and he goes on, all good. But he doesn't. The lust is there, right? This, remember, we talk about the different kinds of love, you know, so there's this lusty thing going on. And so she turns and she sees him. She makes sure he sees that she's seen him. And basically he shits himself, right? Because, like, my God, she's seen me. And he gets up and he runs, and she says, stop, stop. And he he gingerly kind of, turns around and just says, you know, I gave you a chance, you know, like I gave you a chance, but you didn't take advantage of my mercy. So you know what? You'll never be able to speak of this to all your friends that are in the forest, all your mates. You won't be able to talk about this, because I'm going to turn you into a stag. And she turns him into a stag, a mighty stag. And she says, if you make one noise, if you, you know, you make one noise, you know, to them, you'll die. And he's like, fine, you know, like not making it okay with this big antlers. And he goes running out, and he can hear his friends. And he's like, I'm gonna run to them, and I'm gonna tell them, right? Like, you know, he's still got a human voice, right? So he runs to them, he starts yelling, and Artemis hears him. And so she just claps her hands, and her dogs and his dogs, hunting dogs, she's in charge of all the hunting dogs of the world, rip him apart.
Wow.
Right? So don't mess with Artemis. You just don't. Yeah. Right? So it's the warning. Here we have the warning about, you know, this.
Don't be a pervert.
Thing, don't, yeah. You know, consent, perving, you know, being a voyeur, you know, oh my gosh, you know, lots of things. Mm-hmm. So you imagine in the old days, like if you were thinking, you know, you're in ancient Greece and you're listening to that story, there is so many lessons in that.
Yeah.
And
even the chance for a bit of mercy.
Yeah, she gave
to make a mistake. Yeah,
exactly. Then, but there was, you know, he didn't take advantage of that. And also, I'm giving you another opportunity. Don't say anything to your mates about any of this, and you can leave.
Yeah,
but no, he has to do that too. So it's, you know, like there's so many mythos, story with the truth. There's lots of truths in it.
Yep. When you were saying he was running to his mates, I was picturing his mates being hunters, seeing this giant prize stag that then they killed. So that's what I was thinking they were going to.
Also being ripped apart by your own hunting dogs. They're going to see you and go, you know. Yikes. So he was pretty damned the moment that he got to stag, really. But almost, I just want, you know, for those of you out there that love mythos, and I know so many of you do, you know, after I'm on your show, I often, you know, get people say, oh, this story, I've got another story. Like, you know, oh, wow, I didn't realize that was the ending. I've heard two or three different versions. Mythos is so interesting because there is different versions.
Yes. Right?
There's so many different versions, and it changes and morphs over time. Mm. So I always suggest those of you who love this stuff, go to the original sources. Try and find the original sources, you know. So go to archaeology, you know, go to the old oral traditions, go to the, you know, original. There's a really good site called sacredtexts.com.
Okay.
And it's sacred with a dash texts.com. Mm-hmm. And that often has the, you know, in one place has the gathering of all the old books, you know, whether it's the Gita from the Hindu, whether it's, you know, like any of the old writings of Herodotus or, you know, like Homer, it's all in that one spot. So that's a really good shortcut for people.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. That's a top tip.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Mm. But but honestly, you go down the rabbit hole, I warn you.
Yeah.
There, you're going to lose time. It's,
Now, I have to ask, because I know many of our listeners would be interested, what do you think about performing love spells?
All right. So I've got a book. I read a whole book on this. It's called Witch in the Bedroom, right? I am a great one for you. Do not interfere with free will.
Mm.
Full stop.
I've heard you say that before.
Stop. Right? So no matter how tempted we may be, we don't cast spells on other people. Right? Even, you know, you're like, I am so scrupulous with this that even if someone is sick, and, you know, I ask permission, can I help you, you know, like you want a healing spell or something? Yeah, I always ask. And if someone is, say, in hospital and they can't ask permission, you know, I can't get permission, I'll stick an insurance policy at the end. If it be for the good of all or they wish to receive it, here's the energy, right?
Mm.
We cannot put our will over someone else's will, right, in particular around love. And the way I try and explain this to people is, how would you like it if someone cast a love spell on you?
Mm.
Right? And normally people are like, oh, yeah, I can get that. I can understand that. And occasionally you have someone that'll go, but it's for their best. You know, this is the best. We are such a great couple and it's for their best and they're pulling away from it. Like, and I'm like, ew.
Yeah.
Right. So this is like, who are you to tell this person that they should be with you? Like it's a dominance thing. There's, you know, like there's lots of reasons why you would go, oh, no. So my feeling is no, but you can cast on yourself.
Mm.
Right,
make yourself irresistible.
Yeah, well, that's one way, but the way that I've always preferred to do it is to, let's say you're looking for a partner, to cast for an ideal partner and to kind of have an idea of what that might look like and feel like for you, what you want to experience with that person. And so there's no one person in mind, it's just this ideal partner and you cast for that, right? And you know what, like, when somebody does that, there's an element of choice involved. There's an element of free will. There's an element of, you know, I always, like, one of the things that happens when you cast for that is this feeling of all of a sudden there's lots of, I say the monkeys come down from the trees. Like, so I always tell my clients, for example, if we're working on this, you're going to get a lot of people interested in you. Right, because you now put it out there. I'm ready. I'm attractive. You know, like the magnetism is there, the charisma is there, charisma. Charisma just means the spirit shines through. Greek word, right?
I love that word.
You know, like so. Hey, you know, there we go. Everything is ready. You know, so you are going to have lots of, you know, potentials come out of. You know,
it's not a chip.
Yeah, right. But when that happens, it is again, this is your discernment that comes in.
Mm.
You don't go, and you know, it's fun to go out on lots of dates or whatever with lots of people. That's all good. Yeah. But if you're after a committed relationship leading to marriage, for example, you know, you ask for that, right? Yeah. And so you're checking these people out against that. right? Mm. So when it's not right, you know, we'll go to the next one. Yes. We don't hang on to them.
Mm.
You know, like we're not mean and go, oh, I'll just keep dating this person for 6 months until somebody comes that's better. Right? That's not that's not what it's about.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, the short answer is cast on yourself. The short answer is not on anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I can tell you the other thing is the number one kind of reversal I might get from someone, like saying, I've cast badly, I would like, you know, your help reversing a spell, is love spells.
Wow.
You know, they've done the thing, they've cast for someone, they've realized that person really isn't for them. And then they've gone, oh my God, I can't get rid of them. They're a stalker now.
Mm,
yeah, they're a stalker because you cast a love spell on them. You know, so you have to try and release that. It's hard.
Mm,
that's scary.
Yeah, but people do it all the time. The other one is, I would like to get my former wife, husband, whatever back. I want you to help me with that, right? And my poor, you know, my poor manager, Richard, has got to deal with those people. And say, Stacey doesn't do that. You know, Stacey does this, which is help you attract someone new, or, you know, your ideal partner might be them. They might come back, but chances are it's going to be someone else. No, I'm willing to pay whatever. Like, people are willing to give you literal bags of money to help them with this. I probably shouldn't say that because there'll be somebody out there who will do it. Do you know what I mean? Like, someone who will take the bag of money on your behalf, but it's not the ethical thing to do.
Yeah,
that's my feeling.
And it will come back too, won't it? It won't.
The fingers come back at you.
It will come back.
Why would I help someone do that? Like,
it's kind of like entrapment, isn't it? Just trapping
someone. But it's also it sets up for this terrible paradigm of obsession.
Yeah.
Because a good love spell can be setting you up for that. You know, like for if you cast it upon somebody else, it interferes with free will. I mean, love spell, like spellcraft works. Right. Mm. So, you know, like
it does.
Some people don't believe that, but it does. And a good, well cast love spell is a dangerous weapon. You know, like if you're directing it, you know, at someone against their will, it's almost a curse. It's not good.
Yeah. Yeah. So returning back to your first sentence is never, ever interfere with free will.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Like, you know, do it if you really want, you know, the right partner for yourself, the right relationship, cast for that. Not a particular person.
Yeah,
not specific. Know what you want. Go turn it all around and go focus on yourself about what you want. You're worth it. You deserve it. What do you want?
Perfect. That's advice.
Very sage advice.
Yes. And I know we've mentioned already a couple of times briefly that when this episode comes out, it's going to be Valentine's Day, the very next day. Yeah. And we've had briefly before we started recording, we had a little interesting chat that I'd like to revisit now about Valentine's Day, about its origins. And do you celebrate it? Because you had some very great...
All right, don't hate me, okay? Because a lot of people out there love Valentine's Day. Right, so... I prefer, like in my diaries, I'll have, you know, the 14th is Valentine's Day, but I put in Lupercalia instead, Luper Wolf Calia celebration, right? Lupercalia. It's a Roman festival, way, 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 way predates any kind of Saint Valentine. You know, historically, there's very meager evidence that there is any Saint Valentine, you know, like a lot of, you know, the Christian stuff that came over, the pagan stuff, we've got appropriation of a story that, you know, is probably around Eros and, you know, the messages going back and forth and, you know, like, so there's a bit of reality there about, you know, young boys being hired to send love notes from one from a young man to a young woman secretly so the parents don't find out, you know, on these particular dates. But the love day dates way, you know, a lot older. And this idea of lupercalia, and I'll tell you a little bit about lupercalia, I think is far more fun. And I would love to see lupercalia happening in every capital city in Australia.
Here we go.
There's a please don't hate me. This is just a fun point of view, and please take this as fun. People have no sense of humour sometimes. this is fun, right? So lupercalia was that the young men of the village that were of age, that were like, you know, 15, 16, coming into their virility, they would be sent up into the mountains and they would have to hunt some kind of an animal, right? So, you know, lupa meaning wolf, if they could get a wolf, fine, to show their virility. But most of the time they would just come down with bits of, you know, sheep that they would find. And the idea was that the blood of the sacrificed animal, and don't forget, during that time, animals were sacrificed. This is not we may not approve of it. I'm vegetarian. I don't need any meat. But this is the bit that is the ancient bit. So they would come down and they would be bloodied. Okay, so they would be naked and they would be bloodied, and they would have a bit of leather or skin from the animal they sacrificed. And everyone in the whole of the town would line up in the main street waiting for these young men running down from the mountains, naked, bloodied, and the idea was that they were virility, okay? They were love. They were virility. So if you were, say, a woman wanting to get pregnant, or you were pregnant, you would be lining up in particular, right, because you wanted to be blessed by that bloodied piece of leather, right? So we've got a whole bunch of whipping happening here, like gentle whipping, but whipping all the same, by a whole bunch of sexy, naked young men who are showing their virility for the first time to their neighbours, right? And then apparently the cool part about this is if you were a young woman, you were looking for a young man to marry, you got a good look. You got to have a beautiful before you chose to go back to your parents and go, oh, I kind of like young Maximus over there. He's pretty cute. Saw him running down the street. I like what he has to show.
Making an informed decision. Right?
But the idea that the whole thing was about fertility was about, you know, this idea of virility, fertility. Yeah. And again, if you were trying to get pregnant, you had to make sure that you were in the front row and you had to make sure you got a little bit of blood on you.
Right? Okay.
So, you know, we don't have to do this now in George Street in Sydney.
Can you imagine?
No, we don't have to do it with the blood. We can do it some other way. There's other things we could be flinging around. But I always put lupercalia in when I write in my diary, because so much more fun than St. Valentine's Day.
Absolutely. Great for shits and giggles.
Now, would you mind reading a favourite quote about love for our listeners?
Look, I thought about this, right, and I don't really have a favourite. I wanted to be really honest, like, because there's just so many – there's so many love quotes out there, and, you know, like, there's all these beautiful Rumi ones, and there's all these beautiful, you know, like, so I just love the idea of love being, you know, one of the Stoics talked about, you know, love being the first thing, right?
Yeah.
That being love is the first thing. Might have been Cicero, right? That it's the core, right? And don't forget again that the Greeks saw this as the first organizing influence is love. Like, there was chaos and then there was love, So they see it as the opposite of chaos. It's the organizer of chaos. So if I think about love, I can think of, you know, like I said, I went looking at my Rumi books, and I went looking at, you know, all the different authors I know that talk about love. You know, there's just so many.
Mm.
But what it comes down to for me is that love is the center. Love is the first thing. Love is the first thing. And if I can think about a love of self, a love of a desire for things, a desire for more, a desire for this sort of the pleasure. And I think so many of us are really good at organizing our lives or getting stuff done, tick, 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 you know, but we're not good at pleasure anymore. We're not good at joy. We're not good at building those things in. And I think, you know, Valentine's Day doesn't have to be about, you know, a love of our partner or a love of this person that's coming into our lives or flowers and romance. And, you know, like when I was younger, when I was in my 20s, of course I wanted the roses from some guy, you know, of course I wanted a nice restaurant, you know, because that's kind of what was expected.
That's what we're sold.
That's what we're sold. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And now I think about that and I cringe. I kind of go, God, no, that's not what love is for me. Yeah. You know, like that's, you know, I've got a great marriage, I like to think. And, my husband isn't, our love languages are not that. Like that is not, you know, the hallmark thing is not our love language.
Mm.
So my love language, you know, my husband's love language is to cook for me, you know, or to acts of service, let's call it that, right?
Yeah. And
definitely the sort of thing that he would do for me. Or, you know, he knows me well enough to know the sort of things that I would want. I don't want flowers. I want a new ski helmet.
I love it. Of course you do.
That's nice. I grow my own flowers. I go, they're all out there right now. I don't I'm okay. I'm cool with that, right? But this is like, you know, he wrote me a list of where I could get a new ski helmet and, you know, like just tell me where it is. It's near me and I'll go and get it for you, right?
Yeah.
So that is more romantic to me than you know, him coming home with some flowers of some kind, you know, like that's just me. Right.
Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah, but the love is first. Love is the first thing.
Love is first. Beautiful.
Love is first.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Stacey, do you have a divine tool of the week?
Oh, my God, I do. I thought about this.
Yay.
And I thought, okay, the first thing I thought about, just so you know, the first thing I thought about was, of course, the traditional chalice and athame, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because for those of you who are, you know, Wiccan or your traditional witches, the idea of the chalice is the feminine, the masculine is the athame, and, you know, kind of made sense for Valentine's Day in some way. But then I thought about, okay, so what is sort of, what do I do to bring love? Like what do I, and like I'm a big fan of big chunks of rose quartz, right? Look at the size of that,
yeah,
right?
That is beautiful.
I don't do little, and unless I do gridding and I grid, you know, my property or whatever, you use small stones. But I'm all for big and easy.
Yeah.
So this is actually from my bedroom, from the back of my bed. I've got, you know, this sort of size amongst for some other things in the entrance of my house because I want love to pass,
you know,
or the energy to be there at the front, inside the front. You know, so I think for those of you that are into, you know, as a tool, using crystals as a tool, and I'm not saying you have to be as obvious as a big fat piece of bright color.
Well, those are beautiful.
Yeah, these are great. Like, you know, I've got some friends who you know, give me these. I haven't bought a crystal except for, you know, gridding in a really long time. But, you know, these are just so weighty and, you know, there it is, you know. So I kind of think, you know, I'm not a fancy mandala person. I'm just like, give me a big chunk of rose quartz and I stick it at the end of the bed.
I love it.
So I'm a simple soul, right? So this, that kind of energy. And of course it's been charged up, and it's not just sitting there, you know, like being itself. It's, I've put some energy into this. I take it out, you know, for it gets charged up at Beltane. Mm-hmm. It gets charged up in Imbolc. So all the spring energy and that fertile creative energy goes into this. But I think crystals are a beautiful tool. The other one that I'm just going to quickly say is for those of you who, and I know quite a few of you, make potions, right? A good love potion. I'm not talking about the ones you take internally. I'm talking about, you know, beautiful mixes of fragrance and you know, flower essences and all of that. A proper potion for love, in particular of self, developing self-love. You put in like making it into a massage oil and take going from your tips of your toes to the top of your head, explaining how beautiful you love every part of your body. That is like gold, right? Like it's something that's been done across Egyptian culture, Mayan culture, you know, Rome, you know, like all of that always had love potions for the body. So I think starting with that is a good, it's a good way of doing it.
It's another good one. Wow, that's way more than one. I love it. Thank you.
Sorry.
Don't be sorry.
All our tools, right?
Like, yeah, absolutely, especially when it comes to love.
Now, Stacey, do you have anything brewing you would like to share with our podcast coven, and how can everyone find you?
All right, I'll go with the finding me first. I'm pretty easy to find. You can go to my website, themodernwitch.com. There's lots of information and, you know, courses and programs coming up. I've got lots of books. You can, you know, buy my work there, and, you know, so that's a good spot. I'm on Facebook under Stacey DeMarco. I'm under The Modern Witch on Insta. What have I got coming up? Well, by the time that this is up, shortly after we'll be starting a program, an 8-month program on Zoom, that will be around starting a home temple. So having home practice and how to create one that's beneficial for you. In, you know, as fancy or as simple as you want, but, you know, all the aspects that you would take into consideration, you know, everything from altar to patron gods and goddesses to, you know, all of that juicy, wonderful stuff about
all that good things.
So, you know, that will be starting in April, so not far after now.
And beautiful. We will include the links to your Instagram, your Facebook, and your website in the show notes attached to this episode. So for our beautiful listeners, just scroll down and you'll be able to, you know, have a direct hit on where to find out all that extra information and sign up for it all.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
That's the easy bit. Thanks so much for a beautiful chat.
I'm going to say happy Lupercalia.
Yes.
Yay!
Yeah. You can ask your husbands to do a nudie run for you, you know?
Why not? Yeah. Why not? Yeah. Tag you in the photos.
Yeah. I was just about to say I'll get mine to do it and I'll send you a pic.
Yeah. I love it.
I'll marry ladies saying all of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm trying to shock you, younger ones. I'm sorry.
Just a little bit. I've got all this to look forward to.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your time, Stacey. I know everyone's going to love this episode.
All right, lots of love.